Welcome back to Jazz. I'm really excited about our guest. There's a lot of superlatives I think you can throw out at people. A lot of times they're not accurate. You just kind of say them. One that comes to mind is the man, the myth, the legend. And I think all those kind of are true. We have Mr. Brad Rock with us today. Brad, how's it going?
Well, it's mostly myth, but yeah, it's going well. You know, I covered my last Jazz game last spring, and it's different seeing them from a distance.
I bet. How's retirement? Because you retired in August.
Yeah, it was last day of August was my last day, the Utah BYU football game, and then I walked away from it. But the Jazz did have me come back in December. They were great. You know, they gave me a cake that said, "Well, thank you, Rock Monster," and they put me on a Jumbotron for a few seconds, and so it was really good. But I like not doing it. I loved doing it, and I like not doing it.
I bet. We met, you know, I think a lot of people in the media, you know, you kind of just like inadvertently meet, you know, at a scrum or practice, and you don't really know each other until you kind of talk. And I was lucky enough to sit by Brad for a couple of seasons when they still had the perch above the Jazz Tunnel. I knew who you were, but I didn't think you knew who I was, but were always really, really, really friendly, really just nice.
Oh, good.
Really, I don't know, just welcoming, you know, like, so I don't know. I don't know if you remember meeting me, but I certainly remember meeting you.
Yeah, I do. And I knew who you were and I knew what you did. And I read the stuff, you know, I read it on jazz.com and stuff like that. You know, you knew a lot more about the Jazz than I did. You were there every day. And when I was writing columns, you know, I do a number of times during the season, but not every night. And so it was great to talk to you. You educated me a lot of nights.
I remember there was one, I was just thinking about this. I don't know if it was a playoff or All-Star weekend where we were in an airport. I don't even know if you remember this.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there was a delay, but we were kind of just there for like an extra hour.
It must have been playoffs.
It must have been playoffs. And yeah, I think we just got a chance to just chat you know, get to know each other a little bit.
Yes, but I remember.
Yeah, that was a good delay because it flew by because I got to talk to Brad Rock.
Well, it is, Matt. I mean, that's a great way to get to know people. I've known some writers, you know, Matt, that you would sit by them and you'd make a comment during the game and they would freeze you out. They're going, "Hey, I'm here for work." And you know, there was a wall there. So I always liked people like you that you make a joke or just make an observation and you get a response back. So I loved it.
It's definitely an interesting world, you know, the different personalities that come through it. For people who may not know, Brad Rock, writer for the Deseret News for how many years?
It was 41, I think. Yeah, 40. I was in New Mexico for most of 1 year and came up to Deseret News and ended up getting these good assignments and stayed here.
And you covered the Jazz specifically as the beat writer for 4 seasons?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What years were those?
Yeah, it was 1990 through 1994.
Okay.
So I came on and they were just really getting good by that stage.
Yeah.
And you know, the 80s, everybody goes, "Wait, who are these guys?" They had Thurl, Mark Eaton, you know, Stockton Malone, and they were just coming into their all-star form. Mm-hmm. And so it was a really good time to cover those guys.
Yeah. It just came to my mind. It's almost like you can compare that time that you started with right now's team. Donovan and Rudy are kind of coming into their own, like Stockton and Malone. It'd be a nice time to become a beat writer.
Yeah, I kind of get that sense. Like they're on the verge of something. I don't know, Matt. We'll talk about it later, I'm sure. But I don't know how far along the current edition is because they're really good. They still don't have any all-stars. Maybe next month it's gonna change. And Stockton Malone, you know, 14 and 15-year all-stars. So it's hard to project that far. But this is certainly the most excitement and interest and chemistry by far since those guys.
Yeah. I first heard of you probably like a lot of people did. And I really had no idea who you are. But I knew because Hot Rod Hundley would say... And forgive me, I'm not the best at impersonations. Hot Rod would say, you know, you got to read Brad Rock, The Rock Monster. Yeah. And I feel like he would say that. It might have only been a handful of times, but I thought it was like every game. Yeah. And it became part of Hot Rod's mm-hmm. thing, and he would say it. And I thought, oh, who is this Rock Monster? And like he would say it, and you almost thought you knew who you were and liked you because Hot Rod gave you a nickname.
Yeah. Oh, he did. Yeah.
So what is the story for people who may not know with the Rock Monster story?
Yeah, I hope I don't bore any of your listeners that have heard it before. But yeah, you know, my first year was the last year of the Salt Palace. I sat on the front row next to Hot Rod and Booner, Ron Boone.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had these drop-in ads that would say, for the best in sports coverage, read Brad Rock and the Deseret News. Well, for some reason at that time, Hot Rod started calling Ron Boone the Boonmeister, which didn't take off. Now, tell me why mine did and his didn't. I don't know. But, you know, he was calling the Boonmeister, and one night he said, I'm here looking live, you know, courtside with my buddy the Boonmeister and Brad Rock the Rock Monster, and we just kind of laughed. So the next night, the drop-in ad comes. He's got a cue card. It says, for the best in sports coverage, read Brad Rock and Deseret News. And he goes, Rock Monster. And I kind of laughed. So that went on for about a week. And then I went into our marketing guy, and he said, Steve, this thing, this ad you have, Hot Rod keeps calling me Rock Monster. I said, I feel like it's Fred Flintstone or Barney Rubble. I said, it's embarrassing. And Steve said, let me take care of it. So he calls over to the Jazz. And so for a few nights after that, he's going, for the best in sports coverage, read Brad Rock in the Deseret. And so I went back to Steve, the marketing guy, and I said, Steve, I don't know, maybe, I don't think his heart's in it. Maybe I'll let Hot Rod do what he wants. So they called him back and said, do what you want. And from then on, this went on for, Matt, maybe 15 years. That's why it sounds familiar to you.
Yes.
When he'd read it, he'd get the cue card, and he'd say, read Brad Rock, Rock, Rock. And he'd throw the cue card over his shoulder and just wing it, you know, freelance it. So, yeah, I got this goofy name.
I love it.
And now it kind of makes me laugh, but it took me about 5 years before I could even stop cringing when they do it, but it makes me laugh.
Did Hot Rod just come up, like, do you know why he called you Rock Monster? Is it just something he just came up with?
I think it was something like the Boonmeister, and then it just popped out the Rock Monster.
Yeah.
And Hot Rod loved it. And, you know, it's funny because his nicknames, like Little John Stockton, didn't work. Slick Willie on Darren Williams didn't work.
Yeah.
So some of them, Sky Blue Edwards, and it kind of worked, and Big T Bailey worked. But it was funny. It was just one of those that kind of stuck.
Yeah. Well, for me, for an entire generation of jazz fans who are like me, the Rock Monster is a character, and we all just felt like we knew who you were
and wanted to...
Just, I don't know. You were just part of it.
That's
the
crazy.
Rock Monster.
It
worked.
Yeah, I remember that era. It was kind of like that with following along with Hot Rod. And I wasn't any real part of the, I wasn't really any part of the success or really any figure, but the commercials went on. Yeah.
So it makes me think about Hot Rod. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate that I got to interact with Hot Rod a few times. Mm-hmm. Just the job that I had at first, my first job with the Jazz was a game operations intern. Mm-hmm. So there's these people who come out with the headset and they're coordinating the dancers and the bear. And it was Hot Rod's ceremony, his halftime ceremony, where they put his, you know, name in the rafters. And I got to be the guy who escorted him from the tunnel to the court just because I was the intern, you know. And that was the first time I ever got to meet him. And he was just so, just Hot Rod. And he... Yeah. You know, sometimes people have a persona and they, you know, when they're on TV or they're on the mic, they just put it on it. And then in real life, they're just kind of like, you know, maybe not the nicest person. Hot Rod was just like, he wanted to talk and he wanted to know your name and he wanted to chat and he wanted to talk basketball. And this is like in a 2 minute span. He wanted to like tell you everything. And like, what was it like for you, you know, getting to sit with him and, you know, you probably knew Hot Rod better than most people, I would think, at least, you know, in the media and locally.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, certainly I wasn't his closest friend. I wouldn't pretend that, you know, I mean, he's friends with Jerry West and people like that. So, you know, I wasn't that guy, but I knew him really well. I traveled on the road, rode on the team bus with him, flew on flights with him. And you're right, Matt. He was a genuine good guy and a very funny guy, And he was a superstar in this market. And, you know, he doesn't care because he told me, you know, I remember one night, I don't want to get too far off what your question was, but I remember sitting next to him one night. And, you know, he shows me this. He holds out his hands during a commercial, and he gives me this grin. I look, and it's the room keys. And so, women would pass room keys down with a note. I'm in room such and such at the hotel. And that was him. I mean, he was. I mean, when I say that was him, he was a big star.
Yeah.
And people wanted to know him. And I really liked him. I mean, He made me laugh. And Matt, I mean, I hope I'm not taking too much time
no,
on this.
No.
With Hot Rod.
You just go on.
But I do remember that we had this thing going. I don't know how we got started, but I walk in and he'd say, "Aren't you the Rock Monster?" And I would say, "Were you in the 1936 Olympics with Jesse Owens?" He goes, "Yeah, I was." And then the next time I'd see him, I'd say, "Hey, was it 200 meters swimming that I caught you in the 1964 Olympics?" And he goes, "Yeah." He said, "What about you? Weren't you on that archery team that took the worlds?" And we'd always pretend we could place the guy, but we didn't really know who he was. So
I love it.
I miss him to this day.
Yeah, you're right. He really was a star. You know, growing up, you think of obviously Stockton and Malone and Coach Sloan, Larry Miller, but Hot Rod, man, everybody loved Hot Rod. And it was weird when he retired, you know. I was just thinking today how, I mean, it's just the nature of life. And it's kind of crazy and sad that, you know, kids now they may not even know who he is.
Yeah.
And to me, that's a shame.
Yes.
I mean, that's just how life goes. Hopefully, you know, their parents are... me in this podcast and you, we can, you know, tell people who Hot Rod was because he was amazing.
When he would, and Matt, I was pretty jaded. I mean, you go to every game, you sit down in front row. And so it wasn't a thrill for me to be there. It was a fantastic job. I loved writing. I wasn't, gee whiz, look at me. I'm sitting down in front. That wasn't it. But I don't remember if it was replays because I was usually at the games. Maybe it was after I became a columnist and didn't go to every game. But I can imagine this. I remember when they would do that thing and he would say, you know, Utah Jazz basketball is coming up next and you got to love it, baby. And I remember thinking, oh, people have to love this interview. And I think there is an emotional attachment with people in their childhood and their teenage years and people raising their kids.
Oh, yeah.
That sends a chill up their spine.
Oh, yeah. And in some ways... you know, I love, like, Bowler, Craig Bowlerjack is amazing. Like, He does his own thing. He's the man.
He
but in a way, it's, you know, and Bowler will say it too. Like, you can't live up to someone like Hot Rod. You know, you just got to do, Bowler said, you just do the best job you can. But in a way, maybe it's because I'm not a kid anymore, but watching the Jazz is not really the same. And I mean, I'm sure a lot of that is just growing up. But I think Hot Rod had a lot to do with the excitement, like you just mentioned.
Yeah, he did. And you know, when he retired, I wrote a column about it. And I think I said something like, you know, they'll find somebody else, which they did. David Locke, great job. And David is the guy for now. But when you listen to Hot Rod, you could turn it on and be driving to Wendover and put your radio on scan, and it would stop on a game, and you could tell by the cadence that this was the big show.
Yeah.
This was the NBA. This wasn't college, which is, they're big-time colleges here. But, you know, you could tell from the cadence and the rhythm, and he gave you a visual of that game that you were there. He took you there.
Yeah.
It was as good as it gets.
Yeah. So you were a beat writer from 90 to 94.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure there's got to be, you know, like you mentioned, that is just like the beginning. It was sort of just like right before the team, at least the glory years is what we like to think of it as, before they just took off completely. What was that like being around a team that was that good with stars and the attention and, you know, the All-Star game was here. I'm sure, you know, that was your time.
Yeah, and it was.
All-Star MVPs. So what was the life of a beat writer like back then?
Yeah, it was just crazy. And, you know, what was kind of interesting, Matt, is I just thought I was a guy working, which I was, and just doing your job. But they came back one of those years from the playoffs. Maybe this was after I was a columnist. I can't remember. But they were eliminated from the playoffs. We landed at the executive airport. I think for some reason I had flown on the charter with them, and then they would just bill the newspaper for the flight. And we landed, and the cars were all parked out there on the tarmac instead of out in the long-term parking at the airport. And I get in my Jeep, and you know, all these players are there, their Mercedes and their Lexus and everything. But anyway, I remember driving out, and the streets were lined with fans on both sides. And I kind of wanted to hide under the steering wheel because they're looking like, is that Stockton? No. Who's that guy? Who's that little guy? But
must be the nutritionist.
Yeah. But they, any connection to the Jazz, people wanted to know all about it. So I would get stopped and right up to the end of my career, stopped in Costco, stopped in a grocery store, and people said, oh, so what do you think about the Jazz? And they might have known more about it than I did, but yeah. And then it was work every day.
Yeah. So what was it, you know, because I was around, when I worked around the team, you know, there was a lot of players that came through, you know, people will stop on, you know, I was there at the very end of like the D Will Boozer time, Memo, who's amazing. And then, you know, you transition to Favors and Millsap and Jefferson and Hayward, and, you know, onto who they have now, but you were there for the statues, right? What was it like being around Stockton Malone? And I didn't know, just from hearing, you know how Karl Malone is, you know how John Stockton is. I've been fortunate to speak to both of them. And
yes.
So you kind of, as a fan, kind of know what you're getting with them, but what was it like to be around them every day?
Yeah, they were what you thought. And they were good guys. I liked them both. And Carl could be, you know, feelings on his shirt sleeve, and he might have a day where he's, you know, he'd be all grumpy, and he said, but he always kind of made me laugh, you know, entertained me. And I wish they had more of those guys now. I mean, I'm not sure they got anybody like that now. Rudy Gobert's a really good guy and tries hard. Do they have any real characters on a team? I can't think of any. Mm-hmm. So you know, mailman in the playoffs, it's, you know, I remember one time we came and we'd say, so Carl, what about this upcoming game with the Clippers? And he had a Field and Stream magazine. He'd go, did you know the Duck Hunt starts a day earlier this year? You say, okay, my man, what about guarding so-and-so? And he'd go, you know what? They got some new ammunition out. And he answered every question with some dumb thing from the magazine. I loved it. Some of the people were frustrated about it. So I liked it. And I went in the locker room, Matt, one night, during the playoffs, and he said, if we make the finals, I'm running for mayor. And it wasn't quite that simple. I had to lead him into it. I said, let's see, how was that? Oh, yeah. Okay, so he was complaining about Bill Clinton. He was mad about Bill Clinton because he thought his taxes were too high, and that was Bill Clinton's fault. And so I said, have you ever thought about doing something about it? And this was just me and him in the pregame locker room. And nobody, for some reason, nobody had come in. I said, have you ever thought doing anything about it? And he goes, yeah. And I said, like what? And he kind of shrugged. And I said, like run for office? And he goes, yeah. I said, what position? Started out city council or something? He goes, yeah. And I said, what about that? And he goes, I said, mayor? He goes, yeah. He said, if we make it to the finals, I'm running for mayor of Salt Lake. They didn't make it that year, but it was only a year or two before that. But, you know, I followed the story and ran on a front page of the paper, mailman wants to be the mayor of Salt Lake. So we're missing those guys.
Yeah.
There is no guy that's going to, you know, at least in this group, I don't think it's going to go out there that far. So I loved it. Mailman could be immensely entertaining. And then John, you know, was maybe, you know, more conservative down the line, great guy to break down the game. And John was really good to the beat writers sometimes. Matt, we were up in Portland for the playoffs, and Clyde Drexler, just before halftime, reached for a loose ball and stuck his finger, as I remember, up to the second knuckle into John's eye. And John goes in the locker room. We didn't know if he'd play, and he tries to come out. And the team doctors told me that John was in the locker room was seeing two complete different images because his eyes were messed up and he couldn't tell which was real and which was the extra image. And he was trying to dribble a ball. I'm good to go. Well, they made him sit and they brought Delaney Rudd in, and Delaney played in the second half. But I do remember after the game, everybody wanted to talk to John, and he was gone by the time they opened the doors to the locker room. And the PR guy, Kim Turner, came and said, "Brad, Steve," and me and Steve Loom were covering the team, and Tom McCacken from the Ogden Standard, he said, "John will talk to you." And they brought us on the team bus, and John said, "You guys are the local guys. You guys put in the work.
Oh,
that's
awesome.
I'm going to talk to you." So he kind of took care of guys, and really a good guy. If you were not talking about basketball and you were in an airport sitting with him and you want to talk about your favorite author, wow, he was really good. He's a good guy.
Yeah. I think probably the highlight of my career or life is when he had his biography come out a few years back. I was able to interview him about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you were in on those as well. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those moments as, you know, a kid growing up where you're just like, I can't, like, it'll never get better.
Can't process it. Yeah.
Yeah. It'll never get better than sitting here talking to Stockton.
Yeah. He was that guy. And just to tell you how good a guy is, you know, he is a guy that you would really want in your corner if you're in a bad situation and he'd have your back. You would want to be his neighbor. That's all I'm saying. I'm not pretending I'm close friends, but I do know a few years ago, I was with John. He was here for something and we were just kind of chatting. And I said, "Hey, you know, my daughter's your neighbor." And he goes, "What?" I said, "No, just kidding. She's not your neighbor, but she lives in Spokane." He goes, "Really, where?" And I said, "Oh, she's in Spokane Valley." And he goes, "Really?" He said, "Oh, okay." And so we talked and he said, "You know, if she ever needs help, give her my phone number." And I said, "Oh, no, I wouldn't do that." And then we talked a little bit more. And then as we ended, I said, "Well, it's good to see you, John." And as I started to walk away, John said, "Hey, Brad, seriously, give her my number." And again, I'm not pretending that I'm in John's inner circle or anything, but it gave me an insight. Oh, by the way, I told my daughter, "I'm not giving you the number." I said, "John said it," but I said, "I don't want you to get a flat tire and call the guy that's in the Hall of Fame. Leave him alone." I never gave her the number. But I just thought if you were that person that was a close friend with him, I'm telling you, no wonder guys wanted to go to war with John.
Yeah. No, that's an awesome story. So I read somewhere the past couple days, speaking of Mailman, you know, he had a line where he told you for some reason, I want you to tell me the story, where he was tired of looking at your face. And, you know, I assume you're around a lot and he was tired of you, but like, what was that all about?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's not a good face to look at anyway, but I mean, maybe my wife's thinking the same thing. I don't know, but, now that I'm retired, but, I mean, it was like March. And it was the end of the season. It just gets, you've been there, Matt, it gets to be a grind. It's hard work. Players haven't started. They're just finishing it out, grinding it out. And I came in the locker room and he said, "I got to look at you again." You know, and I just kind of, I can't remember if I said, "Yeah," as if something like, "Yeah, I know, I'm just doing my work too. I mean, I'm not too excited about this either." And then he went on. But that, great for Carl. He didn't cut it off. He just let me know it wasn't his favorite thing to do. And I think I let him know it wasn't my favorite thing to do either. But he was really good about it.
That's funny. Another, you know, character or, you know, person that's just so fascinating is Coach Sloan. I don't know if Coach Sloan is the kind of guy that, you know, opens up to, you know, beat writers or local writers. And I was certainly there at the very end of his coaching career, and at the couple of years after was able to, you know, like interact with him and, you know, he and his wife. And man, it's just. Just like meeting Stockton Malone, it's such a thrill. And it's, you know, these are just like the apex of like celebrity in a jazz fan's mind. What was it like being around Coach Sloan pretty much his whole career, coaching career with the Jazz?
Yeah, he was a gentleman. I mean, aside from the salty language and scaring people with his size and the size of his hands, you know, how he had these great big giant basketball hands. But I liked him. He treated the writers. You know, Matt, he won some of the NBA awards that they give to the coaches for cooperating and being helpful with the media. He wasn't, you know, colorful. He wasn't a jokester. but he was always there. He was a man who would come out and face it, win or lose. He didn't back down. And then he was funny. I mean, he still had that homespun, you know, country Illinois guy from McLeansboro, Illinois, and he still had it in him. And I remember one year I was in one city, and I saw Jerry the next morning or somewhere. We were in the hotel. I said, I don't know how he brought it up. I said, boy, did you taste the water in those rooms? It was terrible. And I guess I'd gotten up to get a drink in the night and just didn't have a bottle of water or something and drank it out of the tap. And Jerry said, I can see you've never drunk out of a cistern. And I had to look up a cistern, but I guess what cattle drink out of. It's like a fountain that is out in the field or something, and cows come drinking. He said, you've never drunk out of a cistern. So you would get that stuff from him. He was really kind of a funny guy, but he was everything that his image was, and maybe a little more tender-hearted than you would think it was.
Yeah.
'Cause I saw him get teary-eyed a few times.
Yeah. You know? Any kind of conversation they get from this era, people want to listen to because it just brings back instant fun memories, fond memories. I want to play a little game that I didn't really prepare you, but I think you'll be okay. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say a player's name, and you just say the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
So, Greg Ostertag.
Goofy. Yeah.
Antoine Carr.
Blustery.
Okay. Phil Johnson.
Bright.
Mehmet Okur.
I would say adorable.
Okay. It's just,
yeah.
I totally agree with that. John Crotty.
Authentic.
Cool.
Yeah. Those are good names. I'm surprised you would know.
I'm trying to think back to 90 to 94. What about, you mentioned Luther Wright.
Mixed up. Yeah, he had a lot of issues, a lot of drug issues, a lot of emotional issues. And it almost cost him his life. Did you read the book on him?
I didn't.
After he left, I knew some of this stuff, but after he left, he wrote a book. And I got a copy of it and wrote a column about it. But he went back after leaving the Jazz, became homeless, slept in cars, slept in doorways in New Jersey. And I think the book opened up and it said he heard plink, plink, plink. And he woke up and he was in an operating room. And the sound was they were snipping his toes off. They were frostbitten, and he had fallen asleep in the cold, and somebody had gotten him. And I think he finally pulled it back together, according to the book, and he was a minister now in New Jersey. But he had a hard life, and he got arrested here. He got into all kinds of trouble, almost got shot by a police officer here in Salt Lake.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Had some emotional issues and some drug issues. Yeah, he was out by a rest stop in Tooele back in the 90s. And he went on a rampage the night my wife had a baby. And I got home up after being up all night, and my phone was filled with messages from City Desk and the sports desk saying, you got to find out what happened with Luther Wright. And that ended my celebration of having a baby, and we worked on that. And I got kicked off his doorstep. His mother was there. I went out to his house, and I felt like I worked for a Current Affair or TMZ or something like that.
Yeah.
I said, get out of here. He called his names and stuff. But he there were a lot of issues that he had that they didn't know when the Jazz drafted him.
Jeff Hornacek.
Stand up. He's a stand-up guy.
Yeah,
Jeff is really, really likable. If you ever, ever had the thought, all those guys are jerks, all those NBA players, you have never met Jeff Hornacek. He's as real as it gets. Maybe rather than stand up, the word is real.
Yeah, I like it.
Love him.
Two from this era, Rudy Gobert. What comes to mind?
I would say he's authentic. Yeah, I really liked Rudy. And these guys, when I was just writing columns and the newest ones, I don't know them on that personal basis where I traveled with them or anything. Mm-hmm. But I've really been impressed with Rudy as a gentleman. I like his fire. I find it really interesting how he's so composed and well-spoken when after the games, but has so much fire during the games.
Yeah. Last one, Coach Snyder.
Brilliant. He really, one of those guys, where you go in, and I've had bosses that were this way, publishers and people of the newspaper, you come in and you say, I'm overmatched. This person is the smartest person in a room. And that's how Quinn Snyder is. And I've liked Quinn. I mean, I think he's, again, a guy that's really upfront and comes out after every game and does it. But whatever he's describing is on such a level beyond my understanding of the game. I kind of sometimes tune out and I go, hey, how about giving me just a good quote instead of breaking it down? Because you know what? I don't understand what you're talking about anyway.
So we're talking about Rudy, two-time Defensive Player of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you worked around another Defensive Player of the Year, Mark Eaton. The game is so different from now to when Mark was dominating in the paint. You know, I believe statistically he doesn't have the total overall number, but I think Mark's the best shot blocker ever, you know, per game basis. Well, the Jazz now have the best shot blocker, the best defender in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
From your perspective, you know, being watching Mark Eaton, and now watching Rudy Gobert, totally different players, different styles, but equally as dominant. Mm-hmm. You know, just talk about those two and what similarities and how they impact the game.
Yeah, they were, you know, Matt, they were each men for their era. And you know, nothing had been conceived of Rudy Gobert back in then. So back in Mark's era, big men ruled the game. The game was inside. And so... Mark Eaton was down there, and man, you've seen him, you know him. I mean, even by NBA standards, he's awe-inspiring. Mm-hmm. as a big guy.
Still.
Yeah, he's still.
Yeah.
He's still, and such a bright, smart, articulate guy. And I remember Hakeem Olajuwon was once asked who the one player he dreaded most, and it was Mark Eaton. And Hakeem, as good as he was, I think he won two MVPs. I sometimes still look at that guy and think he might be underrated. He was unstoppable.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you remembered seeing Hakeem play. He was unstoppable, and he didn't want any part of Mark Eaton. So Mark was that guy. He didn't get to go to those finals years because he had back and leg problems and everything. But, boy, he anchored them. And those guys, there are a lot of people that say, you know, John's the all-time steals leader in history. And a lot of people say, that's because of Mark Eaton. Not only Mark, I mean, John certainly had the talent, but he could gamble and do things because Mark was gonna end the journey for whoever thought he was going to go in the middle. So that was him. Rudy Gobert is phenomenal, and his anticipation and his athleticism was, you know, a much different guy in a different era. And Rudy's extending his range a little bit. Mark had zero range.
Mm-hmm.
And so Rudy is a fascinating thing. Not flashy, you know, not really flashy, but I'd be interested to see if people give him that respect to make him an all-star this year.
Yeah. Do you think we've seen the best of Rudy? Do you think he's still going to improve?
I think we are, because this guy seems to be driven. I mean, he seems to be one of those guys. And, you know, Mark did that, and he said they would go home. That's what made those Jazz teams great. If you know, Stockton, Malone, Eaton, and Thurl, and those people, they wouldn't settle and say, we're a pretty good team. They would always improve something in the offseason, and I think Rudy's doing that. He is just a guy that I don't think, you know, as much as he wants to be an all-star, and he admits it, I don't think ego is what drives him. I think excellence is what drives him.
Yeah, that's well said. We kind of touched on it a little bit, you know, comparing Stockton and Malone to Gobert and Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of hard to do, obviously, because you have two legends of the game and their entire careers have passed and you can see what they've done, and you have two guys who are kind of just starting to blossom. But when you think about, you know, duos and stars in Utah, and, you know, in Utah specifically, they kind of have to be homegrown for the most part. And I feel like the Jazz and Jazz fans, we were so lucky the first time around. I feel like we might be equally as lucky now getting these two guys. So when you kind of just look at, I mean, like I said, it's hard to compare them,
mm-hmm.
but just what it means to the Jazz and the state, and just as to fans having, you know, these guys on the team.
Yes, I haven't I haven't seen this kind of excitement with a couple of guys since Stockton and Malone. Boozer and Darren Williams were popular because they won, but they never connected to the city that much. They were kind of aloof. I think the excitement is the most it's ever been since then. I wouldn't compare them yet. People want to do that because of social media. It's shot up so fast with Rudy and Donovan, but you know, Stockton Malone, two of the 50th greatest players ever to play, two Hall of Famers, and neither of these guys have made the All-Star team yet. So yeah. I think it's crazy to project and say, hey, these guys are better. Mm-hmm. Do it for 18 years, and we'll see it. But that's taking nothing away from them. They're a phenomenal couple guys to watch.
Yeah.
And I just hope that for Jazz fans that they're able to see those guys through their careers, and that's going to be the hard part because, yeah. you know, players don't stay. And that second, they sign their first contract, and then they usually sign the first extension, and then the one after that when they're in prime money making era and they're the best at their game. That's a concern to see if they can keep those guys.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, Donovan, and again, you can't necessarily compare. When I think about just straight talent wise, is he the best? Is he the most talented player the Jazz have ever had? And you kind of think about it, well, I mean, Karl Malone. Karl was such a physical, you know, freak, for lack of a better phrase, just imposing. No one could stop him. And Donovan is obviously way different in his game. But when I just think about just strict, purely talent, is Donovan the most talented guy the Jazz have ever had?
They had guys with the physical skills. I mean, there was a guy named Kerry Scurry. Who was as athletic as Donovan or more, but he didn't have the complete game. Donovan is you know, brilliant as a guy that understands the game and lets the game come to him, and certainly the physical skills. So I think you could very well be right. The thing about mailman, certainly not as athletic as in the way we're using it. As Donovan, but yeah, I mean, he was 6'8", 256, and he ran the court like a deer. And you know, those fast breaks we all have in our mind, how he could get down the court. And I used to sit in some of the arenas on the baseline and underneath, and you couldn't believe the abuse he took and dished out. But some of the ways he got slammed and could get shots off with three guys hanging on his arm was unbelievable. So in his own way, he was a freak. Now, getting back to another thing, let me just say this about John. There were higher jumpers, but I talked to Frank Layden, the team doctor. Frank swore that John's peripheral vision was unparalleled, that he could see, really, he said he could go down the court and turn 45 degrees one way, 45 degrees the other, and see all the way behind him, see a hit. And he said that's why he could do those passes. His trainer and the doctor said his ability to recover from fatigue was beyond anything they'd ever seen. They said he could be almost exhausted, wait while he shot a free throw, and be breathing normal.
Wow.
And he could process oxygen and do it that way. And then his hands were bigger than Mark Eaton's. Now, Mark's were kind of small for his size, but I saw him on a team bus. I said, put your hands up there. This is the kind of silly stuff when you travel with him. I said, let's see your hands. They put them up together, and John's were as big or bigger than Mark Eaton's. And if you look at my hand, Matt, it's pretty long fingers, and his were, you know, a half inch bigger or more. So he had these gifts. But they weren't the traditional ones. You say, he was very quick. But there were quicker guys, there were higher jumpers and everything. So anyway, you get down. But okay, that long dissertation. I'm going to go with Donovan as overall the most gifted athlete in combination they've had. But whether that gets him anywhere, we'll know.
It's kind of fascinating what you said about Stockton with the things you don't think about, you know, like fans aren't going to think about, you know, the endurance or his lung capacity or just being able to recover. Like, that's a real thing, and people are never going to think about that.
There's no way to measure it, and John's not going to talk about it.
Yeah.
And, so, you know, then you look. Can I just say one more thing about those two guys?
Yeah.
So Thanksgiving Day, one year when I was the beat writer, I had to go down to practice. Used to make me mad. Jerry would practice on holidays because he said, I don't want my guys thinking about Thanksgiving and Christmas. So he would call practice. And, you know, I get mad at Jerry because my wife was mad at me because I was like going on Thanksgiving Day. So I would go down there, and I went down to practice. They went through a Thanksgiving Day practice, and everything left. And I think I did some interviews or something, and there was nobody left upstairs. And, you know, it was at Westminster College, and there was nobody up there. So I went downstairs where the weight room was, went down and walked down there. And they had a little weight room down in there before the Jazz had their own practice facility. And there's only two guys down there, Stockton and Malone. This was before Hornacek was there, but there's two guys, Stockton and Malone. And you know, it just really hit me. I said, you know, there's a lot of gifted athletes. And then there's the guys that go the extra mile. And those guys on Thanksgiving are the two guys who, by all logic, don't need an extra practice on Thanksgiving, and they're down there. That's what made them what they were.
Yeah. No, it's so true. You see guys come in the NBA, or really any professional sport or any sport, where in high school or college, they just were the best and they were the man and they didn't need to even practice. And then they get to the professional level and they continue that way and they usually flutter out. Mm-hmm. And you see that all the time, you know, like the NBA draft. Here's a number six pick and he's amazing and he's got the best vertical in this. And then 2 years later, you don't even know his name.
Yeah.
And I think that's because guys don't know how or they don't want to work.
Mm-hmm.
That's why coaches like Coach Snyder are so great, because they make guys work.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole thing with, you know, coaches who want to just be your best friend, like, that's nice, but they're there to make you better. And I think when you think about Stockton Malone, they just had that internal drive, and I'm sure Coach Sloan was kind of making them. They probably would have been doing it on their own, even if he wasn't.
Yeah. I think Jerry said this a year ago when I interviewed Jerry, and I wrote a column on how he was doing, and I think he said something like, anybody that works as hard as those guys do are going to get better. And yeah, it was the same thing with Michael Jordan. I mean, it really was. And you know, towards the last time the Jazz played the Lakers in the playoffs, I somehow miscalculated the traffic, which is easy to do in LA, but I got there faster than I should. I was probably there 3 hours before the game, and I walked out toward the court there at the Staples Center, and you know, the ball's bouncing, and I walk out there, and there's only one guy practicing. It's Kobe Bryant. Wow, you know, okay,
yeah.
You know, he wasn't going to saddle me because he hadn't shot well lately or something. But I will juxtapose that with the Jazz had one player. I'm forgetting who he was 1 year, but he was there, Matt, on a 10-day contract, and Jerry called an optional practice, and it was all for the reserves and stuff. I think he left the main guys out, but he called an optional practice. And this Jazz player was on a 10-day contract, and he didn't show up. He went looking for an apartment, and they cut him the end of the 10 days. And the apartment didn't, you know, maybe he got a nice apartment, but he didn't have a job anymore. And I thought, that's interesting. Here's a guy hanging on with a 10-day contract. He doesn't come to the optional practice, but you'll see Jerry and those guys, I mean, John and Carl, when they're needed and so forth, that we're going to be there.
You mentioned Michael Jordan, and I only ask because I don't know what it's like. What's it like covering and interacting with and interviewing Michael Jordan?
For me, he was everything you want him to be. I mean, and he did everything well. And when I say, when you know, you can imagine his voice. I mean, he could have been an FM radio guy and been the best in the country. He could have been a game show host and been the best game show host. He was the best at everything. But he used to warm up, and he's a real savvy guy with the media. He used to warm up, and he'd come around after he'd laid the shot up and go back in the line, and he'd run past you, and he'd nod and wave to you. And I'm not saying we're friends, or he even knew my name, but he knew our faces, so visiting who the people were that covered the Jazz. And I got him alone one night. I went in the locker room before the game, and he was getting ready, and for some reason there was nobody there. And, you know, I said, can I ask you questions? And he looks at my name tag and glances kind of, you know, pretending he didn't see. He says, sure, Brad, what do you need? And like, we were buddies, and I thought, this guy's savvy. I mean, I don't think he knew my name. I got 10 minutes or something with him, and I was asking him about, you know, what's it like when you're on a road? He had some great stories. He talked about, you know, hearing noises out of his room, his hotel room, when he'd go on the road, and cracking the door and peeking out and see security people dragging people away, screaming, I got to get to Michael Jordan.
Wow.
And he once was on a team bus, and a woman laid down in front of the bus and wouldn't leave unless he got off, and they were going to call the police and everything, and Michael said, let me just take care of it. He got off the bus and signed it. But that was, so my whole story was about fame and autographs and so forth and so on. And he was really good to help me.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So speaking of, you know, interviewing guys, you know, for you, I mean, you've probably interviewed hundreds, thousands of athletes, coaches throughout your 40 plus years. Who comes to mind when you think about favorite guys to interview?
There were different kinds of guys, you know, Hornacek and Stockton, really, Eaton and those guys, Thurl, all really good, cooperative, great people. Mailman really was at the top because you didn't ever know what he was going to do. And you were so thirsty for good quotes because so many of them go by the book and they coach those guys how to not give you anything interesting. And so those were different kinds of guys. You know, maybe my favorite, and I don't think he knows who I am. He wasn't here very long. Kirilla Fisenko.
Okay.
And Fisenko was great. He was just off the wall and very funny. And I remember in the playoffs asking him a question one time. They were playing the Lakers, and I said, so are you going to look at any of the movie stars? Because every time we go down, there'd be Nicholson and Diane Cannon and Arsenio Hall and people like that would all be down there. And he said, well, we're not supposed to look. He said, but if Jennifer Aniston's down there, he said, I'm gonna look. I'm sorry. He said, I grew up watching her. He said, I don't care. And it was gold. I mean, you know, because how many guys are going to say, I don't care what the coach says. If Jennifer Aniston's there, I'm going to watch. And I'm going to try to catch her eye. So Fisenko was maybe the funniest, but Felton Spencer, Greg Foster were good. They would say straight up stuff. And then just really good guys. Ty Corbin, Jeff Malone was really kind of funny, but low key. Jeff Malone, sometimes when he'd get hot, Jerry would call a timeout. And Jeff thought he should get more shots. But there was John and Carl there. And Jeff would get hot and he'd come over and he'd go by the press row and pretend he didn't see me. And he'd hold his hand out and shake it, quivering, like, I am so hot. Give me the ball. But he'd look at you out of the corner of his eye. So Jeff Malone was very good. But, you know, getting back to great interviews, Frank Layden and Larry Miller were just gold. Still are. Yeah.
Frank
still is.
Mm-hmm. a little bit more about traveling every day with the team, you know, little things like, what was your favorite city to go to?
New York is, you know, fantastic, but Jerry would have him stay out in New Jersey, in Secaucus, New Jersey, because he didn't want him getting in trouble in Times Square or something like that. So, you know, we're stuck out. And I would always stay in the same hotel for the very same reason. I had access to the players. If something happened, you could get a hold of people. So I would book the same hotels and find out where they were. I liked Boston a lot, you know, liked Miami. San Antonio's kind of underrated. And, you know, places I didn't like, all of them had their stuff that were good. L.A. never got bad. You know, L.A., we've all been there a lot of times, and there's always something to do. So that was a good part of the job, and, you know, sometimes you get a chance to walk the Freedom Trail in Boston or go see the Rocky statue in Philadelphia. And so it was all pretty good. Go ahead.
What about, you know, just arenas mm-hmm. to be in? I'm sure, you know, the old Boston Garden or mm-hmm. Madison Square Garden, you know, maybe
Chicago Stadium. Yeah.
Yeah. So like when you were going to the cities is one thing, but the arena, maybe it was where your seat was. Maybe mm-hmm. it was the media food.
Yeah.
You know, like what stadiums did you like to go to?
Yeah, well, those are two different questions. In media food, Golden State was, you know, I don't know so much recently, but I remember him giving a steak one year. I mean, real steak in the press room. The Golden State Warriors, and I think it was either New Jersey or Philadelphia, was the reverse. They bring in a 6-foot sub sandwich and cut it into 1-inch things, and that was the press room food. Where were we? What were we talking about? Favorite
fest? Just like arenas to go to, you know?
Yeah, arenas, yeah. Okay, yeah. So talking about arenas, you know, of course, the Forum, and that was good. And Madison Square Garden had its own feel, certainly famous. But probably the most memorable would be Boston Garden. Chicago Stadium, I had a lot of memories from going there, and deafening when Michael Jordan came out. You literally could hear nothing. But Boston Garden, I took it to the test, and I walked up in the back one night before the game, and you know, there were seats you couldn't see the whole court. There actually were seats they sold you couldn't. And then I walked on the court, and there were dead spots. And you know, the old story that Larry Bird used to walk the court, remember, and he would bounce the ball until he hit the dead spot, and then he would guide the player that he was guarding over the dead spot. When the ball didn't come all the way up, he'd steal the ball. And I believe those stories because I walked on the court. And I went there, and the Jazz players did say that the showers were cold, and Red Auerbach, and this the coaches after that. I don't think Red was coaching when I got there, but it was kind of a dive, but had tons of history.
When you think back on your career, you know, you were able to go so many places and do and see, meet so many people. You know, like what stands out is, you know, maybe it was the finals and Jordan and Stockton, but was there a game that was just a random game that was just stands out in your mind? Like what stands out when you think back on it?
Yeah, this one was a home game, but it was the Jazz and the Bulls, and both great, great teams. And I think it was just before they reached the final. Yeah, I was still a beat writer. So it was between 90 and 94, and the Jazz played, and it went to triple overtime. Yeah. And the Jazz beat him, and Michael Jordan got ejected. And Jeff Malone, he fouled Jeff Malone. Jeff makes two free throws at the end of the game. And MJ got ejected, and in a rare thing, I don't think he talked to the press after that game. That was an unusual thing. But that was really an intense, I mean, about as good as basketball will ever get. So
yeah,
I think that's certainly one of the memories. And it's a lot of my memories, Matt, weren't the games. They were going to the places. And you know, I have a ton of those stories.
I'm sure you do. Yeah. Now that you're retired, I'm sure your wife's happy that you get to be around. You know, if you haven't read, you should read in the D News. There's an awesome feature on you right before you retired, and it kind of just tells, you know, a lot of it is just like really brief, but just like a little peppering of, you know, your career. And you know, I just can picture your wife, you know, on New Year's Eve or Thanksgiving or whatever it is. And, you know, you got to go do your job. And she's like, hey, you know, what about us? And
yeah.
So now, you know, I mean, maybe even tell me a little bit about what it was like then and now. You know, is she tired of you now? Like she's used to having the house all to herself.
I fear that could be the case. But, you know, it wasn't as big a transition as a lot of people. Because I was at home a lot writing, and when I was writing columns, a lot of the opinion of columns, and so I was home. So, you know, me being underfoot, I was kind of that way anyway, getting in her way, but I was around here. But I think that, you know, she has my full attention now, and most of the time through those 40 years, it was kind of, okay, yeah. And then my mind is thinking about my angle for my column while I'm answering whatever it was she wanted me to do. So it's been a lot different watching from a distance, but it's kind of fun, Matt, to, as great as the job was, I loved every minute of those 40 years, but it's kind of nice to just take a nap or go to bed after a Jazz game instead of hoping you can meet the deadline.
Yeah. I mean, I can sympathize with a small part of that, you know, not being at games. And, you know, I went to every Jazz game for 10 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, eventually you kind of just like, you get tired of it. Mm-hmm. There's a funny line that I think by your wife where she would kind of root against the local teams.
Yeah.
And my wife was kind of the same. And I would always joke when the Jazz would win, it would just mean more work, which wasn't necessarily bad. It was just more work. And I was at the arena later. But when they would lose, you just kind of forget about it and you're just done for the night. And it's the same kind of thing, you know. The Utes are really great. Now they're going to more bowl games, or they're going, you know, they're playing more in the March Madness tournament. And so that's kind of an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Where you would always say you weren't a fan, you know, you were just the media covering it. But now that you're out of it, are you a fan? Are you a fan of the Jazz now?
That's a really great question. And I always wondered, what's it going to feel like? Right now, it hasn't changed for me. And what I used to really cheer myself inside myself was whatever held up the angle that I had started.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Because you did this. So if the Jazz were up by 15, I'm thinking, yes, please win this. But if they're down by 15, I'm thinking, don't win this game. Then I got to rewrite my column. So where I am now, Matt, is it's kind of nice. I can't see when it'll happen that I'm going to paint my face and then I'm going to go get a Jazz hat. And no disrespect to the people that do. And I am behind them because I've got a son that's a fan of the Jazz and fan of the Utes. And he pays for his tickets. And so you and I didn't pay for our tickets. So it's easy to be objective when we haven't invested in it. So good for those people that are super fans. But I don't know when it's going to be. I don't wish ill will. I they had a little thing where they had me come back in December, and the Jazz treated me great and gave me a cake, and Gail Miller came down, so impressive, so gracious, and so I wish them all well. But as far as me screaming, my kids don't remember that. And my daughters have married guys that are super fans, and they're pumping their fists and they're getting all mad they're going, I didn't grow up with it. They don't remember me ever doing it. Even when I was at home watching the game, I just kind of do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just kind of watch it.
Yeah. One question that came to my mind, it's along these lines, is let's say this year or next year or the year after, sometime in the near future, the Jazz win the championship. Are you happy that you're not there because of all, you know, the work and whatnot that goes into it? Are you sad that you're not there because you're kind of, you know, missing out on it?
I'm kind of glad I'm not there. But, I'm sure you've had the same feeling. If the Jazz went to the finals, the back of my mind was saying, I should be here. I need to be doing this. And I still watch games. I go, oh, that's a great call. Oh, this is a good call. And I have nowhere to take it. So that part, I feel like, oh, yeah, I should be there. But the actual practicality, like you said, Matt, when the season goes on 2 months longer than if they don't make the playoffs, it's extra work and no more money. And for the fans, it's fantastic. And for us, it's quite a bit of work, quite a bit more work. And so I won't mind it at all. And good for the Jazz. If they go there, they have earned it. And, you know, they have certainly earned everything that's good that's happened to them. And I wish them well. But I don't have to be on the bus.
Yeah. All the years, you know, where you were on the road or times you're traveling, you know, you got to pass the time somehow. You know, and, you know, that's a lot, you know, whether you're walking around or watching movies or... Mm-hmm. So I generally ask, you know, favorite TV show. Everybody's got them. So what's your favorite TV show of all time? What's the one that you can always just watch no matter what? And, two-parter, what's your, like, current favorite? Like, what are the new ones you're watching?
Okay. So, you know, I'm going to say either Simpsons or Seinfeld.
Yeah, okay.
I still watch them. I still watch them late at night, and not as often as I did because I've got them all memorized, but they are fantastic. And then, you know, I can never turn off if an old Star Trek with William Shatner comes on. I'll probably watch the hokey special effects that they have. That's about it. You know what? As far as current shows, I stopped watching current television. I never saw Friends.
Okay.
I never saw any of those. I mean, about the era of Seinfeld and Cheers was when I kind of stopped watching primetime television. There isn't one show. I told my wife that. I said, I'm retired. There isn't one show I say 8 o'clock on Saturday or 8 o'clock on Tuesday. I don't watch that.
Yeah.
I don't even watch it.
I respect that.
I don't know why that is. I've really been thinking maybe I should get something. I think my brother said 24. You got to see the old 24. And isn't that the name of the show?
Yeah, 24.
Yeah. So I might try to get into that.
Maybe you can find something. You know, your kids might suggest something. But yeah. I mean, I'm glad you said Seinfeld because I love Seinfeld. Like, I had a conversation with Craig Bowlerjack about it. That's his favorite, you know. And
yeah.
It's just kind of timeless, and you know, you've memorized all the episodes, you've memorized the dialogue, but it's like there's something about it where it's always funny still.
It's always funny. And that one other one that I do watch on a rerun still is Everybody Loves Raymond. And he was a sports writer, and it was funny, they were kind of close on it and off on some, but Ray Romano was really funny, whether it was a sports writer or not. But people kept saying, you got to watch this. This guy's a sports writer. You got to watch this. And then I watched it. I thought, it's not really about being a sports writer, but it was worth doing.
I think it's been really fun, you know, talking, but also just getting to know you. I think it, you know, for guys like me, it's just we're kind of lucky that I got to know you because I was just, you know, a random guy who happened to work for the Jazz.
I feel the same. I'm glad I got to.
Yeah, but I mean, you're the rock monster. No, I'm just some dude who happened to get a job with the Jazz. But I mean, I think I used to always tell my wife, like, in a weird kind of way, I wished I would have been born, you know, maybe 30 years sooner, because I think when I look at, you know, a career like yours, and obviously, you know, you only know the ups and the downs, and, you know, obviously the family stuff and missing your kids' graduations, but I always kind of was fascinated by that career and wished that I could have been that. Mm-hmm. So when I look at your career, I mean, I just say, like, well done. Like,
thank you.
I'm sure you were able to do what you wanted, and it's awesome.
I can't believe it. I mean, I still can't believe it. I went without ever being out of a job and never, ever had a Sunday night where I dreaded Monday. I mean, I didn't do it. There were hard days and things didn't go bad. Somebody yelled at you. You know, I had a typo in my column. People made fun of me or they just didn't agree with me. But I never hated the job. I couldn't imagine doing that.
Yeah. Well, I've had you for over an hour. Kind of time flies.
Yeah, it's been great.
Yeah. Any parting words or words of wisdom or anything that you need to get off your chest?
I don't think so. I'm just a lucky guy. I mean, it was a fluke, Matt. It was a fluke that I got the job. And I don't know how I did it. I mean, when I was in Gallup, New Mexico, and I was covering rodeos and high school sports, that was it, that was down there, and Little League Baseball. My first award was on Little League Baseball. You know, the Deseret News called me up and asked me if I was interested. I had sent in a resume. It happened to be the week somebody quit, and I had worked at the Deseret News in the library or something, and as a stringer, and somebody called me. And, you know, Matt, I went into my boss at the Gallup Independent, and, you know, I'm 24 or something, or 23, I can't remember. I went into my boss at there at the Gallup Independent, and I said, you know, the newspaper in Salt Lake's offering me a job, and it's $100 a month more. But I said, if you'll match that, I'll stay here. And he goes, we don't work that way. And I thought, I can't believe it. I could still be covering rodeo for a living now instead of having been able to do the things I covered. So it was luck, and in spite of my own stupidity, I ended up having a dream job.
Yeah. Well, it's awesome. Hopefully retirement is treating you well, and you still make it out to Jazz games every now and then?
I've only been to one. Let me just confess this, Matt. I've watched half of one game, and then I went to the game that they asked me to come to. And I'm not disrespecting that, because I will get back to it.
Yeah.
Right now, it still feels like work, so I'm loving... You know what I'm talking about.
I totally
so
know.
I'm loving not knowing. Oh, let's see, are the Jazz playing tonight? It doesn't matter if they're. But I'll go back, and I am interested in those in those people, and I wish them well. They have quality people, quality organization, and they're much respected around the league.
Yeah, Well, before I go, can I get your best hot rod, Brad Rock, the Rock Monster?
Yeah, I guess you could. I can't remember how the commercial went, but it was just something like, read Brad Rock in the Mid-Rat News, the Rock Monster.
For anyone who's not, make sure you're following the Rock Monster. His handle is actually The Rock Monster.
At The Rock Monster.
At The Rock Monster. So follow him. His avatar is Homer Simpson, I believe.
Yeah.
So, cool. Yeah, he's the best. He's, like I said at the start, he's the man, the myth, the legend. So if you haven't, I mean, the D News is good. They have all of your stuff, you know, archived. You can go read them. I spent a bunch of time yesterday reading. It's fun. Yeah. Just kind of, you know, you had a good sense of voice and sense of humor, and you always knew that you knew what you were talking about.
Or sounded that way.
Yeah, at least you fooled us, so.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I think a lot of people that watch 8 hours of football on Sunday know a lot more about the NFL than I do, but I went to 2 Super Bowls they didn't
there
go to.
There you go. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Coming up before the All-Star break, there's a bunch of games where we'll kind of know if they're for real, but I make a prediction. I think Rudy and Donovan become All-Stars this year. So I just think it's their year. I think the NBA works that way, where they've kind of been snubbed and they're going to get it. So
yeah, build interest for when the All-Star game comes here.
Yeah. I mean,
get those guys.
We'll have to have you back on to talk about what it was like.
I will. I covered that All-Star game. Yeah.
But yeah, thanks again for listening to Jazz. Thanks to Brad for opening up his home to me and being on here. And we'll see you next time. Go Jazz.